Gulfstream introduces the big one. Diamond says the D-Jet will be delayed but worth the wait. And Boeing says the Dreamliner remains on track, but customers aren't buying it. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Friday, March 14th, 2008. Following weeks of anticipation, Gulfstream Aerospace yesterday introduced the Gulfstream G650 Ultra Large Cabin Business Jet. The G650 boasts a range of 7,000 nautical miles at 0.85 Mach, or 5,000 miles at 0.9 Mach. Top speed is 0.925 Mach, which will make it the fastest civil aircraft flying. Ceiling is 51,000 feet, allowing the G650 to avoid airline congestion and adverse weather. Gulfstream President Joe Lombardo says he could think of no better way to celebrate the company's golden anniversary. Quote, "The G650 offers the most advanced flight deck and the widest array of cabin comforts. Its performance and aesthetics are unprecedented," unquote. Gulfstream expects to begin customer deliveries in 2012, following FAA and EASA certification in 2011. The G650 will be built in the company's recently completed 308,000-square-foot plant in Savannah, Georgia. First flight of the aircraft is scheduled for the second half of 2009. You can find lots more detail on the story at aero-news.net. Diamond Aircraft Thursday had some bad news and good news for customers waiting for their D-Jets. The bad news, first deliveries have been pushed back from late this year to the second quarter of 2009. The good news, it's gaining 336 pounds of thrust, better bleed air handling, and better fuel efficiency. Diamond announced it's changing out the design's Williams FJ33-4A-15 engine for the newer -19 version, which offers a significant advance in technology. Thrust is up from 1564 to 1900 pounds nominal, making the aircraft more capable. Diamond President Peter Maurer says waiting for the change now, rather than equipping early builds with the older engine design, has another advantage for customers. The decision, quote, "ensures one configuration and maximum resale value for all delivered aircraft," unquote. Earlier, Diamond announced a deal with Canada's Mélan Aviation for 13 new DA-20C1 two-place piston singles for use in its ab initio airline pilot training program. Mélan General Manager Norm Lamothe praised the plane's economy and said the order will bring the school's DA-20 training fleet to 35, making it the largest in Canada and the second largest in North America. It's a tough week to be Boeing. Hot off the loss of the U.S. Air Force aerial tanker contract to Northrop Grumman and Eads, Boeing is now facing skepticism from customers over its statements that the 787 Dreamliner remains on its twice-delayed development schedule. As ANN reported last week, Goldman Sachs analyst Richard Safran is on record predicting the company will announce another delay, citing unnamed sources. Boeing's Yvonne Leach did not deny the prediction, saying, quote, "assessment is ongoing," unquote. And, quote, "we will communicate to customers on this around the end of the first quarter," unquote. The Seattle Times reports several airline executives and industry analysts at this week's International Society of Transport Aircraft Trading Conference in Orlando, Florida, took Boeing to task over its latest reassurances that the 787 program remains on target for its first flight in June. One senior executive with a leasing company told the paper Boeing's timetable, quote, "was always aggressive, now it's not achievable," unquote. Boeing marketing VP Randy Tinseth told attendees the program remains on the schedule announced in January, with first flight by June and entry into service in early 2009. But eyes were rolling. Another leasing executive told the Times, quote, "yeah, right. There's the official position, and then there's the unofficial position," unquote. The paper says none of these guys wanted to give their names for fear of alienating Boeing, but one exec summed up the sentiment as the days ticked down to the end of the quarter and the expected announcement. Quote, "Boeing didn't learn anything from the A380. Three strikes and you're out. If what comes out doesn't work, there's no place left to go," unquote. The future of one of the busiest flight schools in the United States is in doubt now after its third fatal crash in less than 5 months. This time, the victims included the man who was the co-owner and chief instructor for the school. We're talking about Kemper Aviation, based at Lantana Airport in Florida. School officials told the Palm Beach Post that Jeff Rosell was flying over Lake Okeechobee Thursday morning with three passengers from Florida Atlantic University to survey migratory birds for a research project. The wreckage of the plane was found on ranch land in Martin County, There were no survivors. The NTSB had two investigators on their way to the accident scene Thursday afternoon. Sadly, they've become frequent visitors. The board is already investigating fatal accidents involving the school's planes and students last October 27th and December 8th. After the second crash, six then-current and former instructors and students charged the school with shoddy maintenance and called it a hazardous place to work. But Roselle, described by a former employee as even-tempered and soft-spoken, insisted the planes were safe and dismissed the concerns expressed by instructors as the normal questions which follow a tragedy. The FAA says it is investigating the school's maintenance records. Kemper has been cited just three times over its 18-year history for maintenance problems. The last one in 2000 carried a $1,000 fine. Roselle is survived by his wife, Jennifer, who manages the office at the school, and their two children. The family of his business partner, Akshay Mohan, who works from India, declined to predict whether the Part 141 school itself could continue in operation. Up next on ANN, a deaf pilot sues because of his unsuccessful go-around. A space station camera gets close-ups of Endeavor. And the merger mania starting gun remains in the hands of the pilots. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for March 14th, 2008. On the web, you can find us at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. A man and his daughter are suing their pilot, Cessna, and others for damages stemming from a 2005 plane accident they say was caused by lack of communication with a hearing-impaired aviator. According to the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, a lawsuit filed last week in U.S. District Court states 42-year-old Jeffrey Willoughby and his 13-year-old daughter were passengers in a Cessna 172 flown by Alec Nyman on June 23, 2005. Nyman and Willoughby are both members of the Deaf Pilots Association. The three were flying to Ketama Air Park, a non-towered field near Edgartown, Massachusetts. The plaintiffs claim the field had been notified numerous times of the arrival of the deaf pilots so that precautions could be taken by other pilots in the area. While they were on final to land at Ketama, however, they spotted a Waco biplane already on the runway. Nyman says he pulled up to avoid a collision when his seat catch broke and he slid back. With his hand still on the yoke, the plane's nose rose and the plane stalled. The 172 fell about 100 feet to the ground. Jeffrey Willoughby suffered a concussion, back and leg injuries, which according to the lawsuit prevents him from working as a field engineer. There are differing accounts as to whether the airport manager and pilots at Ketama knew when the deaf pilots were planning to fly in. The plaintiffs claim phone records, but can't say for sure who they talked to. The pilot of the Waco told investigators he was back taxiing for takeoff on runway 3 and had announced his intentions by radio, but pulled off the runway when he saw Nyman's plane on final. The NTSB ruled the probable cause was, quote, the pilot's failure to maintain airspeed during a go-around, which resulted in an inadvertent stall and subsequent impact with terrain. A factor was the pilot's hearing impairment, which prevented him from transmitting or receiving radio calls or hearing the plane's stall warning horn, unquote. Jeffrey Willoughby's lawsuit seeks over $1 million in damages from Nyman, the citizens of Edgartown, the biplane's owner and pilot, Ketama Air Park, the field manager, and Cessna. NASA reports successful docking of the shuttle Endeavour with the International Space Station late Wednesday night, but not before Commander Dominic Gori guided the shuttle through a backflip maneuver, giving the station's crew a chance to get pictures of the orbiter's protective heat-resistant tiles. These photos were sent to engineers on Earth for analysis. So far, NASA is optimistic that Endeavour sustained no serious damage during its early morning liftoff on Tuesday. The first of the mission's five scheduled spacewalks took place overnight. In days to come, the shuttle crew will install the Canadian-built Dexter, the final element of the station's robotic arm system, and the first of three components of the Japan Aerospace Exploration Agency's Kibo Laboratory. Citing tips from three people familiar with the talks, the Associated Press is reporting that meetings about seniority issues between representatives of pilots at Delta and Northwest Airlines are on hiatus, but that the two sides are still in communication. Both airlines have seen their stock prices hammered as investors lose faith a merger can be accomplished this year. Sources close to management at both airlines have suggested that a merger won't be pursued until a plan exists to harmoniously combine workforces. Investors want the airlines to merge to find cost efficiencies as fuel prices rise. Analysts have suggested to pilots they need to get on board or risk a future working for a non-competitive employer. Pilots have also heard, however, industry forecasts that predict severe labor shortages will give their unions significant negotiating clout for at least the next decade. Stay tuned. Officials with the U.S. Air Force and the Department of Defense are at odds over a number of things, to a list which already includes how many F-22 Raptors to buy and how many C-17 Globemaster III transports are needed. Add the question of whether there should be more than one source for engines to power the F-35 Lightning II Joint Strike Fighter. The F-135 engine, under development by Pratt & Whitney, will probably be just fine once the issues with cracking turbine blades are worked out, but the Air Force doesn't want to be at the mercy of a single supplier. That's why GE and Rolls-Royce were awarded a $2.5 billion joint contract in 2005 to develop the F-136 turbofan as a second engine option. But the White House is balking on continuing funding for that program. The Government Accountability Office projected this week that the Joint Strike Fighter risks overrunning its original budget by 45%, which does leave one area of agreement between the Air Force and the Pentagon. It's a really bad time to ask for more money. Still ahead, more open skies, this time with Croatia. You can now book an Eclipse 500 through Virgin Charter. And Heathrow Security continues to be upstaged by protesters. You're listening to Aero News.
Welcome to Cirrus Design, maker of the world's best-selling personal aircraft, the sleek SR-22. Cirrus planes feature the latest technologies and are equipped with an exclusive, life-saving parachute system. It is our mission to make personal aviation safe, affordable, and convenient. At Cirrus, we offer a test drive like no one else in the business.
Shoot happens. Come on, you know it does. Even the world's top test pilots know there are in-flight situations you can't always recover from. Mid-air collision, control failure, pilot incapacitation. In severe emergencies, do what the world's top test pilots do. Use a parachute. Except, instead of having to bail out of a moving aircraft, you can have the safety of a BRS full airframe recovery parachute. BRS has parachutes for an enormous variety of aircraft, from experimental to light sport, and all the way to retrofits on certified airplanes. Shoot happens. Will you be ready when it does? Call BRS today at 651-457-8651 or visit us online at brsparachutes.com.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Friday, March 14th, 2008. I'm Paul Platt. The Open Skies Agreement between the U.S. and the European Union doesn't take effect for a few more days, but already there's another Open Skies Pact which may offer an alternate route into Central Europe, via Croatia. On Thursday, U.S. Transportation Secretary Mary Peters announced the agreement to establish free trade and aviation services between the two countries after just 2 days of negotiations in Zagreb, Croatia. Peters called it another step in improving U.S. transportation and trade ties. Quote, "Today's agreement lays the groundwork for future air service between the United States and Croatia that will provide new options for travelers as well as economic benefits to both countries," unquote. This new agreement calls for the skies to be much more open than the deal arranged with the EU. Airlines from both countries will be free to select routes, destinations, number of flights, and the number of carriers flying them, based on consumer demand. There are no restrictions on capacity and pricing, and cooperative marketing arrangements are okay, including code sharing between U.S. and Croatian carriers. The agreement takes effect as soon as it's signed and will make Croatia the 91st U.S. Open Skies partner. If you thought Sir Richard Branson's recently unveiled Virgin Charter online marketplace was exclusively for high-end bizjet customers, think again. On Thursday, air taxi provider Linear Air announced it has joined, making it the only company on the network to offer the Eclipse 500 very light jet. Linear Air CEO William Herp says he's thrilled. Quote, "Linear Air's inclusion in this select network speaks to our outstanding service and safety record, of which we're very proud," unquote. The Linear Air fleet includes the three-passenger Eclipse 500 and 8-passenger Cessna Grand Caravan turboprops. The company offers business and leisure travelers access to more than 500 cities in the Northeast, Mid-Atlantic, and Eastern Canada from its bases in Boston, New York, and Washington, D.C. Queen Elizabeth will be on hand today at London Heathrow Airport to officially open British Airways' new Terminal 5. Reuters reports that yesterday, a man thought to be connected with environmental protesters sprinted out onto Heathrow's north runway carrying a bag, the second major security breach in a month. Police confirmed the incident happened about 2:05 p.m. and said the man is in custody. His bag was detonated as a precaution but found to contain no explosives. Protesters seeking to roll back or completely eliminate airline flights over Europe have targeted Heathrow, where Terminal 5, a planned sixth terminal, and a planned third runway have made the airport a prominent symbol of growth in air travel. Last month, protesters exploited a faulty security door to gain access to a parked passenger jet, climbed atop it, and unveiled a banner across its tail. Airport security has been a sensitive point with officials since 2006, when they say they foiled a plot to smuggle explosives aboard a transatlantic flight. Environmental activists say more protests and more embarrassing moments for security are planned. For the time being, however, a spokesman for the Queen says she'll be there as scheduled today. Terminal 5 will welcome its first real passengers on March 27th. And finally, an Atlas V rocket carrying a classified National Reconnaissance Office satellite lifted off successfully at 3:02 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time Thursday morning. It was the first firing of an Atlas V from the West Coast. The rest of all occurred in Florida. While it didn't happen with the hoopla of a shuttle launch, we should all care about how this one went. After all, this satellite is the latest in a line, which included the one shot down by the Navy a couple weeks ago. That bus-sized orbiter carried state-of-the-art imaging hardware. When it stopped responding to Earth commands shortly after its launch, it could not carry out thruster firings to adjust for orbital decay and eventually risked dropping toxic hydrazine fuel on Earthlings as it re-entered the atmosphere. After it was successfully blown to bits before it could re-enter, Defense Secretary Robert Gates said the firing was a missile defense test. So, is this one doing much, much better? United Launch Alliance spokesman Mark Rain told the AP the launch went great, but added he couldn't say whether the satellite reached orbit because of the nature of the launch. I sure hope it reached orbit okay. I mean, these target drones are getting really expensive. And that's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, an ab initio training program where 100% of graduates who interview with regionals get hired upon graduation. Not bad. Jim Campbell talks with Larry Wade, director of training for Delta Connection Academy. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend and have a clear and unlimited day.